Shalom Aleichem, Rabbeisai. We're going to be speaking today about, we're dealing with the third section of Shtaris and contracts. We're going to talk, Amir Tzashem, about the topic of agreement validation. There's a number of components of the agreement validation. Like you see in the Maror Mekoymes, there's the Bittul Moidah. We spoke last week, Bezal Hashem, about the concept of Moidah, and we went through it by Arichus, which is important. We're not going to speak about the bittul moedah, which takes place in the agreement validation. I'm going to try to focus on the Kabbalah's Das Yachid, which is a very, very integral part of the agreement validation. And then I'm going to speak about Amir Tzashem, if we have time. The Din Torah, which I once sat on, so there's one Zeichet to be a Dayan, or not Zeichet to be a Dayan, however you want to look at it, that involved the Kabbalah's Das Yachid part of the agreement validation, which in my opinion is the most important part of the agreement validation. That entire happened to have a lot of shtaris and contract components, which are somewhat complicated, which we're not going to get to in the beginning of this year. Maybe we'll get to the end of this year if we have time. It's not so much about the agreement validation, but more about just general hilchos shtaris, which we'll see if we'll get to. Just as a brief introduction before we get to the actual case that we'll be discussing, what's the purpose of Kabbalah's Das Yachid? And what's the explanation of Kabbalah's Das Yachid? Let's just explain that a little bit because it's a little bit of an obscure concept without much basis in the Gemara and the Rishonim. That's why in the Maror Mekoymes you'll see we did not bring down that much from the Gemara and the Rishonim. So we know in Chayshe Mishpat that we know in civil law there's a concept of innocent until proven guilty. Now, in Chayshe Mishpat, there's an interesting concept. The concept is Amoitzi Mechaveil Varaya. Almost everybody is familiar with this concept if you learned in Yeshiva. Amoitzi Mechaveil Varaya. Whoever retains control over the assets, he is the person that's assumed to be the winner of the Din Torah, and the other party has to prove his case against whoever controls the assets. Now, that's a great concept, an amazing concept, but it's a concept which, because of our galus and our struggles over the generations and the shikchas ha-Torah that took place and the massive amount of arguments which crept into the halacha, it became a very, very difficult concept to deal with. Why? Because in Chayshe Mishpat we have many volumes of Shulchan Aruch and we have thousands and thousands and thousands of arguments. Machloikasin. And we have tens of thousands of tshuva sfarim that were written over the years, where on any given topic you'll have opinions this way, opinions that way. And in almost every given din Torah, as long as it's not a clear outright case of highway robbery, we're going to deal with a situation which is dealt with on the one end in this way by some paiskim, and on the other hand by other paiskim. So in every din Torah you're going to end up with a situation where you have some paiskim that say one way, some paiskim say the other way. How many sort of Avaraya, the guy who has control of the assets, wins? And then you'll just have a mad rush for the assets, right? You have situations where even before the din Torah, people are all calling up a bez and asking, could I go ahead and be toifus? Could I grab those assets to make sure that when I come to din Torah, I'm the guy who controls the assets? Which is an interesting situation, to say the least. And it also makes things very difficult for people who are entering into an agreement if they know that you can't really trust the other person to give him your assets, because no matter how ironclad you make your agreement, the other person will be able to say at some point, how much of a variety, as long as he has some legs to stand on. And a dayan who's paskening a case will have to know every single shita in the paiskim in order to make sure that he's not running afoul of how much of a variety. As long as there's two paiskim that take a position, even if all the other paiskim say not like that, the halacha is that the muchzik could say, Kimli, I hold like those two paiskim who take my position. Maybe if they're too obscure, we don't say it. Okay, there's a lot of arguments about how we deal with Kimli. The problem is that with Kimli itself, every argument about Kimli will be paskined in favor of the person who has control of the assets, and therefore that person has an unusual amount of leverage in any case. So The concept was developed over the years, going back hundreds of years. I don't know how far back it goes. I don't know the historical source of this concept. It's something known as Kabbalah's Das Yachid. It's based on a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. It says, if a person wants to go to Din Torah with somebody else, there's two parties have a dispute, They say, Neman alei Abba, I trust whatever my father says. Or Neman alei Avichar, I trust whatever your father says. He'll be the dayan in the case. You can even trust one individual dayan who's puzzle, who could be a Reye Bakr, the Mishnah says. As long as you make a kinyan, the Rishayim say, if you make a kinyan to be mekabel that person, even if he's one person who's puzzle, you can be mekabel him on yourself. So the place can say, we can do that in every shtar that we draft. We can say, Neman alei, I trust, and I accept the opinion of whoever upholds this contract the most. The intention of the contract. We'll look at the contract, we'll see what the intention of the parties was, what's their main goal over here, and we'll say, whichever poisik, das yochid, whichever poisik is most supportive of this contract, that's the one that we're makabel as the poisik for our din toira. He'll be our dayan. That's the concept of Kabbalah's das yochid. Very extremely powerful concept. Now we're going to explore today if there are any limitations to this concept. So like I said before, it's critical for a shtar to include this language. And even if a person wants to go ahead, and many people do, and it's justified, to go ahead and draft a legal contract rather than a halachic contract in any transaction they enter into, they should always make sure to get the agreement validation form to ratify that legal contract. It doesn't have to be included in the legal contract. It's not going to mess up what you did with your lawyer. You write have a lawyer draw up a contract, then you go to Bez and you ask for a simple agreement validation form which says that everything in that contract was validated according to the halachic terms of the agreement validation. There's a lot of good things in the halachic contract. The agreement validation form, you have a kinyan sudr, you have a kinyan agav. Many times we'll put in a heter iska. Even if the arrangement is not one, which we would assume would need a heter iska, there's many pitfalls and things that could crop up in any business deal. There are many operating agreements that run afoul of the halachas of ribbis, and it's very, very kedai to have in the agreement validation form a clause which says that if necessary and applicable, this was done according to the terms of heter iska. That way, if it turns out in 10 years down the line that you ran afoul of Hilchos Ribbis, you're not going to lose your money, and Lahavdil, you won't have to worry about Chas V'Shalom having run afoul of the Isser of Ribbis, and you can rest easy at night because you know that your contract was done al pi heter iska if necessary. In addition, we spoke about the concept of Bittul Moida, which will preclude any other party from voiding this contract by means of a disclaimer. And there's a number of other provisions which say that any suffix in the anything which is unclear in the contract should always be read in terms of what will uphold the terms of the contract and the intention of the contract. That's not going to be that helpful because if there's a suffix, we usually don't know what the parties want. There's many kinyanim. There's also something which precludes asmachta, which is very important, extremely critical. Many stipulations that people make, we spoke about last week, run afoul of Hilchas Asmachta, and there's a stipulation, an agreement validation, which precludes and overrides the Isser of Asmachta by saying that that this kinyan was done in the Bezdin Choshev. Additionally, the agreement validation takes care of issues of Tanai B'nei Gadov Bnei Ruvain. We spoke about in the Maror Mekoymes that there's an issue of Tanai B'nei Gadov Bnei Ruvain where stipulations have to be performed and spoken out in a specific preordained procedure has to be followed. If you have the agreement validation, even if the language of the internal document runs afoul of the procedure set forth in Tanai B'nei Gadov Bnei Ruvain, nevertheless, the agreement validation form will ratify those stipulations and cause them to be valid. And there's a lot of good things in there. Kedai, very kedai, to have that agreement validation form attached to any contract that you negotiate. And not every agreement validation form, I just want to speak this out, not every agreement validation form has al pi heter iska. It's kedai to make sure that yours does. So with that, let's start discussing the case that we had. Basically, what happened was, there was a businessman who was involved in manufacturing. Now this individual has a certain talent in fine art type of manufacturing, and this individual wanted to bring all manufacturing in-house. He wanted to create his own items in order to sell. In order to do that, he had to purchase a property, purchase a building, renovate the building, and also receive the proper zoning variances from the township to make sure that his business will be able to be a manufacturing business rather than a regular commercial business. So a lot. This required a lot of capital. This individual had two ways of raising that capital. Number one, he would go ahead and sell shares in his business to investors. Number two, he would go ahead and procure loans or investments of Heter Iska from investors. So two different types of shtaris that he was dealing with. Now, the Heter Iskas were very complicated. We may be able to get into them if we have time. I doubt it. But the main thing that we're going to focus on is the partnership agreements. Now, what ended up happening with this individual is very unfortunate. He purchased the building. He began renovating it. He got variances. However, the person that he spoke to in the township misled him and was, probably not intentional, probably a mistake, but he didn't end up getting the proper variances. His business was shut down for many, many months, and he ended up losing a massive amount of money because his business was shut down. Now, because of that, he was facing bankruptcy. He had terribly crushing debt, and he wanted to shut down the business and open up a new business. Problem was that his contract, now this new business, Bezal Hashem, he had some wealthy investors lined up who would be willing to try to bet on him and invest money in his new business, and Emir Hashem, he would do great. But he had to be able to sell shares to them. Now, the issue was there are many other investors who own shares in his business. He had already sold off close to 50% of his business. His idea was that he was going to shut down the old business. He didn't want to wipe out his investors. What he wanted to do was he wanted to dilute them by opening up a new business, giving those original investors smaller amount of shares in his new business, and give the new investor who was infusing him with capital 50% of the new business. Now, the issue was he had a contract with an agreement validation clause. The contract said that he is obligated to manage the first business number one, for at least 10 years. Until the conclusion of 10 years, he has no right to stop managing that business. So, like we spoke about in the introduction, there's a concept of poyel yachal la'aser b'chatzi hayom. If an employee goes into contract with his employer that he's going to work for him for a week, a month, a year, 10 years, 100 years, it doesn't matter what the term is. The Torah says, Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim, avadayhem v'lo avadim l'avadim, a Yid cannot sell himself as a slave to another Yid. And the Gemara says that going into an employment contract constitutes slavery. And the Chazal said that because of this halacha of Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim, a poyel can always back out b'chatzi hayom. During the term, even though he committed to a certain term, whether it's verbal or possibly even in writing, the Chazal say, poyel yachal la'aser b'chatzi hayom, a poyel could back out. So the fact that he committed to manage this investment for 10 years, is he's basically signing on as their employee. He's obligating himself to perform certain tasks within a pre-described period of time. And that, according to the Paiskim, is considered a poyel, and he's yachal la'aser b'chatzi hayom. He could back out in the middle of the term. So the guy says, look, very nice you guys invested with me. Very nice I signed this operating agreement. But I say, poyel yachal la'aser b'chatzi hayom, I'm shutting down the company, I'm opening up a new one, and I'm diluting you. You should be happy to get even whatever I'm giving you. Problem is, it's not so simple, because according to some poiskim, when you have a shtar, a contract, when you have a kinyan sudr, according to some poiskim, you cannot be chayzer b'chatzi hayom. So, in which case, according to those poiskim, you would not be able to back out. Additionally, his shtar had an agreement validation of Kabbalah's Das Yochid. So, we could argue that even though, according to some poiskim, you cannot obligate yourself to be bound to an employment agreement, you're allowed to always back out. Since according to some poskim you could, and they hold that poel yachal la'aser b'chatzi hayom does not apply to a poel who entered into a written contract or made a kinyan sudr, so he was mekabel that opinion as binding, and he will be stuck in this contract for 10 years. He will be banned from shutting down the company and opening up a new one. He can open up a new company, but he's still obligated to spend his time managing the first company and working for the first company. And then once you get him stuck into that situation, it's going to be, you're opening up a can of worms, because he can't really compete with that first company either, so he wouldn't really have the option of opening up another company at all. Now, the reason why they did this was because this person had a specific talent, and they really needed him to manage that company. You couldn't have anybody else managing that company. So it was very validated and justified what they did. Now the question is like this. Does Kabbalah's Das Yachid have any limitations? So we see in the Maamar Mekoymus that we see the certain tshuvas. I don't remember the name offhand, but there's a tshuva, Mitzvah Kuhuna, I think, and Shoel v'Nishal, that they both discuss a case of Breira. There's a concept in Halacha known as Breira. If you go ahead and enter into a transaction which is not defined, you don't know what you're selling, what you're buying, it will be later determined what you sold. I sell one of my cows, and I don't know which one it is. Whichever one leaves the barnyard first. That's what I'm selling to you. That's going to run into the issue of Breira. According to the Halacha, you cannot make such a transaction. But there is a Das Yachid holds that you could make such a transaction. Says the Mitzvah Kuhuna, and I think it's the Mitzvah Kuhuna and the Shoel v'Nishal, that is a valid transaction. Kabbalah's Das Yachid works for Breira. So we see, L'chaira, that even in a situation where you enter into a transaction, where according to some Paiskim, it's impossible to do that transaction, you cannot sell something which is not determined, the first cow that walks out of the barnyard, nevertheless, or you can't be mischayev to a person that will later be determined who you were mischayev to, right? Similarly, the Paiskim say that the Kabbalah's Das Yachid is going to override that, and it's going to say, since there are some Paiskim that hold a Yesh Breira, right? And there's a suffix with a Yesh Breira, so therefore, this transaction is valid, because it's Mekabel Das Yachid. So we see that agreement validation is a very powerful thing. Even something which according to some Paiskim is impossible to do, nevertheless, agreement validation works. On the other hand, we showed in the Maamar Mekoymus, there's a Tshuvas, the Sefer Zecher L'Avraham, earlier Achron, who writes, pertaining to Davar Shaloi B'Lo'ilam, that if you try to sell Davar Shaloi B'Lo'ilam and you're Mekabel Das Yachid, that kinyan will not work. Even though you're Mekabel Das Yachid. Why? His rationale is like we're saying. Great, you're Mekabel Das Yachid. That works with regard to something which it's possible to sell. You're able to sell this item. If you're able to sell this item, so even though you didn't do it in the right way according to some Paiskim, but since according to some Paiskim you did do it in the right way, so I'm Mekabel Das Yachid, and right now I'm going ahead and selling it on all events in the proper way. When I'm a Kabbalah Das Yachid, what I'm really doing is I'm saying I'm going to restructure that arrangement in a way which will validate the sale regardless, because if there's one Paisik that holds that the way I did it was proper, then even if according to many Paisik I didn't do it properly, we'll make sure that it was done properly according to all those Paisikim. Maybe that's the explanation. There's different types of explanation that you could say. But the upshot is that according to the Zecher L'Avraham, if something is simply unsellable, you cannot sell it, then the halacha is that, and even if it's only according to some poiskim that you can't sell it, if there are certain poiskim that hold that it's impossible to sell this thing, whatever you're going to do, you could jump through hoops, you're not going to be able to sell this item. According to the Zecher L'Avraham, Kabbalah's Das Yachid is not going to help, because the Kabbalah itself will be invalidated according to those Paiskim. What do you mean you're Mekabel Das Yachid? You accept it as binding, the opinion of whichever Paisik says, that it does work, but that acceptance itself is invalid because we're dealing with something which over which you have no control. You have no ability to affect the ownership of a Davar Shaloi B'Lo'ilam. You can't change the status of ownership of a Davar Shaloi B'Lo'ilam. So being Mekabel to follow a Das Yachid is not going to do anything for you, because it's not better than making a Kinyan which is not binding. So according to the Zecher L'Avraham, Kabbalah's Das Yachid will be extremely limited. Now, the Peiros Yosef brings down the Zecher L'Avraham. Now, I had an interesting story, I'll just point this out. So I actually ended up, like I'm going to speak out soon, I ended up passing this in Torah, that Kabbalah's Das Yachid is not effective, and I'll explain soon why I ended up with that conclusion. Part of my reasoning was, you have the Zecher L'Avraham and you have the Peiros Yosef, who both say that Kabbalah's Das Yachid is not going to help in this situation. So even though you have the vast majority of Paiskim perhaps say that it does work, my position was that you could say Kimli like the Zechor L'Avraham and the Peres Yosef and say that the transaction is not valid. So there was a dayan in a different Bezdin that called me up. He had a similar case and he wanted to know why I paskin like that. So I told him, you have the Zechor L'Avraham, you have the Peres Yosef. Kavaldik. Problem was, in my notes, I wrote down where the Zechor L'Avraham was, but I didn't write down where the Peres Yosef was. So I found the Zechor L'Avraham. I showed him the Zechor L'Avraham. Okay, he actually wasn't sure if the Zechor L'Avraham meant it conclusively. He tried to prove from a different part of the Zechor L'Avraham that he didn't mean it conclusively. So you would lose even the Zechor L'Avraham. And I couldn't find the Peres Yosef who quotes the Zechor L'Avraham. Number one, so we have another Pesach. Number two, the Peres Yosef interpreted the Zechor L'Avraham in the way that I interpreted it. So because I wasn't able to backtrack and find out where the Peres Yosef was, this Dayan disregarded the Zechor L'Avraham and ended up paskening, I believe, that the Kabbalah's Das Yachid was effective. I spent time trying to retrace my steps and finding how I found that Peres Yosef. I could not find that Peres Yosef for the life of me. So just take this with a grain of salt, this Peres Yosef. Whatever it is, I thought at the time that there was a Peres Yosef and Zechor L'Avraham. I looked it up. I didn't just make it up, but that's I neglected to write down the exact location of the Peres Yosef. But we have, on the other hand, like we said, we have the Mitzvah Kuna, we have the Shalva Nishal, and there's another few Tshuvas for him, the Pri Tvua, the Pri Adama, the Pri Aretz. Both of them say that Kabbalah Das Yachid works even something which you can't sell. The case of the Pri Tvua and the Pri Aretz is that somebody tried to sell a loan, a Milva Al Peh, a loan that did not have a promissory note attached to it. A verbal loan, somebody lent somebody money, the lender wanted to transfer that loan to tzedakah. He wanted to make it into tzedakah. And he was mekabel das yachid in that transaction. Says the Pri Aretz and Pri Adama, it works. Why? Even though there's many rishonim that hold that you cannot sell a loan to tzedakah, because it's davar she'ein b'reshusai, you don't have ownership of that loan. Nevertheless, since he was mekabel das yachid, and there are rishonim who say that it does work, it's going to be a valid transaction. That's what the Pri Aretz and the Pri Adama both say, both earlier Achrayim. So I wanted to say a chiddush. I wanted to say a gevaldik chiddush. I wanted to say that in our case, by employment, by Kedli B'nai Yisrael Avodim, the Pri Aretz, the Pri Adama, whichever payers you want, the Shel V'Nishal, the Mitzvah Kuna, are all going to be maskim. Why? Because they're talking about a different case. What are they talking about? They're talking about you were trying to sell a cow whose identity is not known, for example. Or you're trying to transfer ownership of a loan. Yeah? They're understanding that the concept of Kabbalah's Das Yachid, the concept of Neman Olei Abba that we started off with, the underlying and underpinning foundation of that concept is Hoidas Baal Din. If a person says Neman Olei Abba, and there's a Yad Ramah that gives this explanation as well. The Yad Ramah says that the foundation of the concept of Neman Olei Abba is like Hoidas Baal Din. When you come and say that you accept the opinion of Abba, of your father, whatever he passes, I'll follow, basically what you're saying is, I am being Moida, I admit that if Pliny says that the money belongs to him, that I admit that it belonged to him. I give up my rights, I admit that I was wrong. So too, if you admit that there are poiskim that say, yesh breira, right? I sold my cow, I don't know the identity of the cow, but I admit that this cow is yours. Cow, Elsie the cow ended up walking out of the barn first. Bezdin takes this contract, Bezdin interprets it as saying, Reuven was moided to Shimon that Elsie the cow is his. That's possible. It's possible that Elsie the cow belongs to Shimon and not to Reuven. It's not possible, according to some Paiskim, that the transaction worked. That's true. Some Paiskim will say it's impossible to make that original transaction. But it's possible that Elsie the cow always belonged to Shimon and you didn't need a transaction. Similarly, if you grant to Hektish a Milval Peh, you take a loan that does not have a promissory note, like we spoke about, and you say that Milval Peh should belong to tzedakah, right? It's true that some places can say that you cannot do that. You cannot transfer ownership of the loan. However, when we get this Din Torah later, when this Din Torah comes in front of Bezdin looks at the loan, and they look at the shtar, and they see it was Mekabel Das Yachid, so he said, So the lender said, if any Pesach in the world holds that this loan belongs to Ektish, belongs to Tztaka, then it should belong to Tztaka. According to Yad Ramah, the way we interpret that is that it's as though he said, I am Moida Hoidas Baldin, I admit that this loan belongs to Tztaka. We don't go into the details how it got to Tztaka. Maybe Tztaka made the loan originally. Since the underlying and underpinning concept over here is Hoidas Baldin, we don't necessarily have to go ahead and look into the details of it and figure out why he thinks that it belongs to Pliny. The fact that he's standing in front of Bezin, he signed the shtar, and we interpret that as meaning that this loan belongs to Pliny, that should be enough. We don't have to think about why he thinks it belongs to Pliny. So therefore, if it's possible conceivably that a loan belongs to Tztaka, right, then we will grant that loan to Tztaka, regardless of the mechanics of how he wanted to make it happen. But the introduction has to be that there's an important ingredient over here. It has to be that it's possible conceivably for Tztaka to own that loan. It's possible conceivably for Elsie the cow to belong to Shimon. It's possible. The way that this guy wanted to do it maybe doesn't work according to some Paiskin, but it's possible that it does belong to him. In our case, Reuven was trying to obligate himself to work for 10 years. It's impossible, according to some Paiskim, it's impossible to do that. It's impossible not only to do that, it's impossible to be that. According to some Paiskim, you cannot be obligated to work for somebody else. It's impossible. The Torah says, Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim. According to some Paiskim, when the Torah said that, it means that it's impossible for Reuven to be obligated to work for Shimon for 10 years. So you could accept the Bezin on yourself from today till tomorrow. You could say that if Pliny says that I have to work for him, I admit that I'm obligated to work for him. Says some Paiskim, Rabbi Yid, it's impossible to be obligated to work for him. You cannot have that obligation. If some Paiskim say you can't have that obligation, then we say, right now, the guy could say, Kimli, that the Torah says that my Haidah is false. If a guy is Moid about Haidah Asbal Din, that Yaakov never married Rachel, Chas V'Shalom. Somebody, Moida Yidah, Moida Yaakov never married Rachel, Chas V'Shalom. Of course, that's meaningless. The Torah overrides everything. If the Torah says that Yaakov married Rachel, we know that that's the fact. If a person says, I am Moida, that I am an Eved to Shimon, we say, we know that's not true. According to some Rishayim, it is true. According to other Rishayim, it can't be. So your Yidah is meaningless according to those Rishayim. And you could say Kinley like those Paiskim. So therefore, I ended up passing this in Torah that Reuven was not obligated to stay in the business. He was allowed to shut down the business and open up his own business because I accepted the opinion of Zichar Avram and the Peres Yosef. And additionally, I felt that in this case, all of the Paiskim would agree to the Peres Yosef and the Zichar Avram. Like I mentioned before, this is not a ruling which is necessarily followed by all Batei Din. I believe that there was a different Bezin that did not follow this ruling. And it's their right. Nemen alayaba, you can go to that bezin. Okay, thank you for listening.